Hello, everyone. Today I'm going to be talking about the recent trade deal signed between Britain and India by Keir Starmer and Modi there. Just before we get going, I'll remind everybody, pick up the Trivium at the Academic Agency, Foundations of Shakespeare, of course, and given that we're going to be talking about economics, maybe pick up Foundations of Economics too. I am calling the most misunderstood thing of 2025 so far because there's been few stories that have been talked about with as much kind of hot air as this one, if you ask me. And unfortunately, it's been by fellow travelers. What did Britain get in this deal? Okay, so there was a big trade deal signed, and Britain got a reduction on tariffs on whiskey and gin, right? The tariffs halved from 150% to 75% immediately, and then it's going to reduce further to 40% by 2035. Okay, this is being called transformational for Scottish whiskey, Scotch. Okay, it got tariffs cut from 110% to 10% on cars. Okay. Britain does a lot of car exports to India. Well, now it can do even more. And there are other goods, all tariffs have been slashed across 90% of lines. Cosmetics, lamb, salmon, soft drinks, chocolate, biscuits, medical devices, aircraft parts, electrical machinery. 85% of these will be fully tariff-free within a decade, worth £400 million annually, based on 2022 figures. Okay. And this is a really pivotal thing that was hidden in there. British firms can now compete for Indian government contracts. Okay. So these are things that Britain got. Why is this significant? India has been historically, since the days of Gandhi and the independence, a very protectionist nation. So for India to be opening up its domestic market for foreign firms to come into is quite a significant thing, especially given that Modi is a nationalist. Okay. What did India get the other way round? Well, they got tariffs reduced on clothes, footwear, food products, spices, increased consumer choice, reducing prices in UK shops, and there was duty free on about 99% of Indian exports. And this is what most of this video is going to be about. They got a concession from Starmer on something called the Double Contribution Convention, the DCC, which basically means that Indian firms operating in the UK don't have to pay national insurance contributions for any Indian staff they have seconded to Britain. I'll talk more about that in a second because that has got the lion's share of the online outrage. And I actually think that, objectively speaking, this deal that Starmer has signed is pretty good. Okay, let me explain why it's good. Okay, well, first of all, there you get 400 million quid in exports up front this year. Okay, that is projected to be 25.5 billion by 2040. Okay, there's going to be a 4.8 billion pound GDP boost projected, of course. 2.2 billion pounds in additional wages for the UK as well. Now, why these big gains from this deal? Well, you've got to think about India not only as a big country with cheap labor, which has historically been the way to think about India, but also as, or if you think even more historically, think back to the days of the British Empire and the Raj, right, where raw materials were imported from India, but then manufactured goods were sold back to India. Okay. India is now a huge export market. Okay. Out of their population of 1.4 billion people, around 100 to 300 million of them, that's the top 7 to 21% of the country, now have significant purchasing power. Okay. There is a burgeoning Indian middle class or even upper class, i.e., people who've got money. Okay. And when people have got money, they want to buy stuff. And so the consumer class in India is estimated to be around 135 million people, okay, as a moderate estimate. That is a massive market. That's a bigger population than the entire UK population. It's actually a bigger population than Germany's population, okay, or France's. So this is a huge market for British goods. And perhaps because of the legacy of the empire and so on, the fact that the British were the ruling class there at one point, some of these British goods carry prestige, especially when it comes to cars, whiskey, gin, cosmetics, chocolate, biscuits, right? A bit of your old biscuit tin traditionalism. The Indians go nuts for this stuff. They are all status markers over there in elite Indian society, where they still do stuff like high tea. I've been to India before. I went to Mumbai, and the vestiges of like the old kind of British class associations are everywhere. They're everywhere visible. All you have to go to is a tea room in India to see that. Okay. That's not to say that every Indian, of course, is pro-British, because that's not true either. I'm just saying that there are some things in Indian society that still carry a vestige of the old era. Okay. It's there. And this is actually a boon, right, when it comes to being Britain selling into India as an export market. So this is actually a neat bit of business by Keir Starmer, in my opinion. It's actually one of the few good trade deals that have come since Brexit, you know. And on this, right, I have to agree with people like Dan Hannan, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and various others, Steve Baker, who said, actually, this is a pretty good deal that has been signed here, okay? So what's the problem? Why has there been outrage? Why is everybody upset about this? Well, there are gains for India as well, okay? They have a reduction in tariffs from about 4% on average to going down to nothing, as we saw. The real gain for Modi, right, is gaining an edge on China in the UK market, okay? There is a slight potential increase in competitive advantage for Indian IT firms operating in the UK. But we'll talk about that in a moment, because that's had the lion's share of attention. But actually, India is not getting that much. It's already got low tariffs on a lot of goods. What Modi is getting, what India is getting, if you really think about it, is a foothold into markets where at the minute, maybe the Chinese will have the contract. Well, you know, they're going to edge out. Also, in some of those areas, like tea, right, like rice. I mean, you know, if you're going to buy anything from India, why not rice and tea, you know? So it's, to me, there's nothing wrong with trade along these sorts of lines. And it's a win-win, right? In a trade negotiation, you have to give something up in order to gain something. And as far as I can see, Starmer has not given up that much here for quite a big gain, okay? Now, there's one thing that I will add in here, okay, which is that Modi may need weapons urgently, okay, for an impending war with Pakistan, okay? Now, I happen to think that war is not going to go anywhere, but it remains the case that there is an urgent need for weapons. And it has been pointed out that the caveat in there that British firms can now compete on Indian government contracts has not been missed by eagle-eyed people. It was kind of sped through, and then things started ramping up in Kashmir. It could be that the real reason Modi has gone for this is because he wants to buy British weapon systems and he wants British defense contractors in there helping out in the operation against Pakistan. It's possible, okay? So what's all the noise about? And unfortunately, this is where things really have denigrated into what can only be described as slop, okay? It's slop. Kemi Badenoch, who it has been revealed, was actually instrumental in getting this deal 95% of the way there, okay? she has, you know, taken a break from her usual doom scrolling and actually like try to use this as a launch pad to attack Labour. Okay. As has Farage. Okay. They're saying, oh, this is created a two tier system between Indian workers and British workers due to this DCC. Okay. Now, I have to say that this is a red herring, friends. Okay. And unfortunately, a lot of friends, including Carl Benjamin, who's a buddy of mine, Richard the Fourth, who's a buddy of mine, Daily Mail, they've all kind of lent into this, this, and they're saying, well, this is going to create infinite Indians. It's going to like cause like a flooding of the market with Indian workers. It's created a two-tier system, blah, blah, blah. Actually, none of these things are really true for the reasons I'm about to get into, okay? What is it that Keir Starmer actually conceded, okay? Well, the first thing is kind of comical, really. It is up to 1,800 visas for chefs and yogis, right? A yogi is a yoga instructor, okay? Now, given that there are 2 million Indians in the country already, I don't think an extra 1,800 yoga instructors is going to, like, you know, destroy the fabric of the country or something, okay? So that is a massive red herring, that particular one. But the second one, which has had more attention, really needs to be explained, okay? It's a double contribution convention agreement, okay? What that means is that an Indian company who has Indian workers seconded temporarily to Britain, okay, so you're an Indian national, but you're working in Britain for an Indian company, that employee and the company don't have to pay national insurance contributions, that is money to the NHS, because that employee and that company instead have to pay social security contributions into the health system of India, okay? Now, that agreement, that DCC, exists between Britain and practically any other country in the world. We've got one with Turkey. We've got one with America. We've got one. So if you're an American working for an American company, that company also doesn't pay NHS contributions because they're paying into Obamacare or whatever it is in America, okay? Same with a German company. Same with a Turkish company. Same with a Swiss company, okay? We have, this is a standard, absolutely standard agreement between all the different countries of the world, okay? So if you have a problem with it, you have to then start making like special pleading arguments to say, well, okay, well, Indians are especially bad for this, or, you know, somehow Indians are going to massively exploit what is an absolutely standard agreement on paying contributions, okay? So the argument that has been made by Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage, who surely know this, is somewhat in bad faith, I would say, okay? Because if their argument is true, basically any foreign firm from any country where we have this agreement, okay, is operating in a two-tier system. It's not a two-tier system because the agreement works the other way around, okay? British workers on secondment to India, working for a British company in India, okay? Now, this sounds, you'd be like, oh, well, that's nothing, AA, right? But actually, there are over 600 British firms based in India today, and British workers do get seconded over to Delhi or Mumbai or any of the other places, okay? There are British, believe it or not, working in India, okay? The total number of Indians on secondment from India in this country is about 20,000, okay? I'm not entirely sure of what the British number is in India, but it's significant. It's in five figures, okay, at the very least. Because those 600 companies, guess what, need workers. Some of them will be Indian, of course, but there'll be a significant, especially the upper echelons of the management, will be Brits working over in India, okay? And what that means is that those Brits working in India and those companies in India, instead of paying into the Indian Social Security, they pay into the NHS instead. Okay, exactly the same arrangement with any other company from around the world. Okay, and you can have a look. There are dozens upon dozens of these DCC agreements. Okay, why we didn't have one with India already, I'm not sure. Okay, and that is what Modi wanted. Fair enough. Okay, give him it. What does it actually mean, though? Okay, what is the double contribution convention? Right. Well, I've just gone through these. You know, between 10,000 and 20,000 Indian workers are seconded here. Mostly, almost all of them, in fact, work in IT. Right. Of those 10,000 to 20,000 Indian workers seconded here, a large bulk of them actually work for a couple of quite large IT firms. One of them is Infosys. There's a few others. Okay. So it's not actually, I mean, of like the 2 million Indians who live in Britain, this is a tiny fraction of them, okay? We're talking about a really small subsection of the British Indian population, okay? These are Indian nationals working for large IT firm seconded here in probably in Canary Wharf, okay? And like I said, there are Brits working over there as well on exactly the same arrangement. Now, what does it all mean in real terms? Because the big hullabaloo, right, what Farage and Badenoch and people like Carl and Richard IV, okay, are saying is that this is going to, like, put British IT workers out of a job, because what these Indian firms are going to do is they're just going to second their entire workforce, over here, right? And it's going to give them such, like, competitive advantage that no other IT firms are going to compete, and it's going to make India like dominate IT, okay? And it's going to put like British workers out of jobs. Well, let's have a look, okay? Indian companies operating in the UK are said to save around, because of this DCC that's going to come in, they're going to be saving around £500 a year in national insurance contributions, okay? Per temporarily seconded employee, right? So if you have, I don't know, 10 temporarily seconded employees from India, you times 500 by 10, what's that? So you're saving like £5,000, okay? If it is a highly paid employee, that number will go up because, of course, the wage is higher. So the national insurance contribution will be higher. So it could be as much as £2,582 that is saved. Okay. So you can start to see its scale. However, hold your horses, Tonto, because in order to get that seconded employee, they must pay for a visa, a skilled workers visa. And that costs £1,476 per visa. Plus something called a health surcharge, which is £1,035. What is the health surcharge? That's put there basically as a kind of contribution towards NHS, basically, right? So even though the national insurance contribution is not being paid, there is a surcharge. Be like, well, yeah, okay, but this dude, he could actually like need to use a hospital while he's here. And so that's compensating that, right? It's recognizing the fact that, these people may actually use NHS services, okay? Now, if you add those two things together, right, what does it come to? It's about 2,500 they save. But when you add the visa and the health surcharge together, oh, look, it's about the same amount of money. Now, in addition to that, the Indian company must obtain something called a certificate of coverage from the Indian government, plus a sponsor license from the British Home Office, both of which, of course, can be revoked if the company is caught trying to exploit any loophole. Plus, they'll be subject to heavy fines from His Majesty, okay? The HMRC, anybody who runs their own business will know very well about them, of course. And they will be on to you if you don't play by the rules. So, for example, if some Indian fella thinks, right, well, there's this new loophole here, I can set up a company purely for the purpose of exploiting this DCC. Well, they'll be onto that, because you have to prove that there's a legitimate need to second the employee, right? So you're not going to be able to just set up a company for the purely for the purpose of secondment. You have to really have a company up and running already, okay? Let's face it, small companies are not going to be able to do this, right? This is a, you know, if you want to go back to libertarian theory, this is a regulatory barrier, okay? There's a cost to entry barrier, which is going to keep out most of the small firms. It's really for the benefit of big IT giants, right? Infosys being one of the premier examples. They can exploit this, but really smaller firms, independent businesses, small employee firms of like 50 employees or less, forget about it. They're just not going to be able to do this, okay? An Indian company running a UK subsidiary must also pay between £5,000 and £20,000 in regulatory compliance fees and legal costs, okay? Now, that may not sound like a small amount of money to a massive company like Infosys, but if you're just a chancer, if you're just a small independent businessman, 20 grand's a lot of money, especially if you're coming from Delhi or somewhere like that. So again, these are massive entry barriers just to play ball, okay? These costs scale with more employees, limiting potential abuse of the DCC, right? So these costs, okay, maybe that amount if you've got 100 employees, say. But let's say now you've got 10,000 employees. You can keep on multiplying that number. That's how compliance works, okay? Now, for a large firm, for example, Infosys, which is the example I've used throughout this video, employing a skilled IT worker on secondment, the DCC, as we saw, is saving you about £2,582, right? But the total cost of obtaining all the paperwork and the visa and all of the this certificate and that certificate, all of that costs just under £8,000, right? So you're saving 2,500, but you're also spending 8,000 for the benefit, okay? Furthermore, those visas that you have to pay for have a threshold stipulation, which for skilled workers in an intra-company transfer of this sort is, quote, £48,500 a year or the going rate for the role, whichever is higher, right? Now, I don't know, more of you will be IT engineers than me, or software engineers, or whatever, or infrastructure engineers, or whatever it is that these people do, okay? But 48 grand is competitive, right? It's not like a chump change, it's not like a shit salary. It's not minimum wage. That is a fair rate for a decent IT job. Total numbers are therefore strongly constrained by the counter incentives in place above this, okay? So all of this panic about this deal leading to Infinity Indians, sorry, Richard, okay, or wiping out British tech jobs, is therefore significantly overblown. It's being trumped up by Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage, aka absolute slop. I'm sorry, I have always told you, I will tell you the truth on this channel, and the truth is that this DCC does not give enough competitive advantage to Indian companies to lead to a massive increase in immigration or the sector just being overrun by Indians, okay? I should mention that the IT sector does have a lot of Indians in it, okay? Now, why is that, okay? Why does the sector have a lot of Indians in it? It's because even with these restrictions in place, right, the Indian company still ends up employing Indians at the low end of the wage bracket, right? And the the more specialist IT firms or some of the premium IT firms, you know, their equivalent engineer may be on 70 or 80K a year, right? So they're still saving money, right? But they're saving money basically because they're cheap on wages, right? Now, how does it work, right? You're seconded, they're paying $8,000 to get this seconded Indian worker in. And, you know, they're limited savings, like we've said. Okay, there's a little bit of saving, but it's not, you know, let's face it, it's not that much. So how does it work? Well, basically, he'll have his wage in India, right? And they give them, you know, they have to comply with the visa, of course, right? But they give them like a kind of London, like a waiting allowance, right? Which is basically the difference between the cost of living in India and the cost of living in a place like London, right? Obviously, London is one of the most expensive places in the world. So they're going to have to give him enough to actually like pay his rent, you know, buy his groceries and so on and so forth. Okay. But yet when he does that, it's still typically lower than the going rate among like, you know, that job in London. Okay. So maybe his peers working for Accenture, say, will be on like 60K or 70K, something like that. Okay. However, despite all of that, right? So you'd think, well, okay, so it's a lower cost, so therefore the Indian firms probably dominate IT, right? It's not actually true. If you have a look, I've bolded the Indian companies here. TCS, they're a big company. Infosys, who we've talked about a lot. Wipro and HCL Tech, okay? Now, what this table shows is the government contracts in millions of pounds, in the middle column, and then on the column to the right, there's private contracts with like big companies, and that's how these companies make their money, right? They it'll be like, oh, the tax office wants to modernize its IT system. The contract's going for like 10 million quid, say, right? And all of these companies, they will put in a bid. Accenture will say, well, we can do it for 10 million. And Infosys will say, well, we can do it for 9 million. And Wipro will say, well, we can do it for 9.2. Cognizant may come in and say, well, yeah, we can probably do it for 10.5, but we've got specialist expertise, right? IBM will come in and say, well, look, we can do it for about 11 as well, but you're paying for the best. We're IBM, okay? And Infosys will say, well, yeah, but, you know, you're paying a lot of premium there just for the name. We're Infosys. We can do it for 9.5. Come with us, okay? And the procurement dude will then be, like, they'll sit down with their executives and they'll be like, well, which of these contracts do we go with? The Indians, they're the cheapest, but they come with problems. Let's face it, okay? Yes, you're paying less cost up front, but do they have a lower quality? Do their guys make more mistakes? And does that cost us more money in the long run? Are they going to deliver on their targets? Are they going to, require constant oversight? Are we going to have to, have like a second team to oversee the first team and fix all of their mistakes? Okay. These are all things that anybody who's involved in this world will tell you goes on a daily basis. Okay. So just because you're saving a million on the contract going with Infosys over Accenture, as one example, right, doesn't necessarily mean that you're really going to be saving that million. Okay. And people in this industry will know that and they'll weigh those costs up against each other. All right. We're doing it on the cheap with the Indians, but are we really going to save money? Okay. And there you can see an actual, representation of the UK IT industry. Now, let's not beat around the bush. Indian firms are not dominating, but they do have a significant foothold in the industry. Okay. And also, on top of that, many of these other non-Indian firms do outsource particular parts of their project. For example, they may outsource them to an Indian office for the lower cost. Okay. And maybe in the case of Accenture, for example, okay, we'll have the Indian team do it. but then we've got our guys in London or our guys in Manchester or Birmingham or wherever they are to oversee it. Okay. That happens as well. IBM will do a similar thing. So yes, Indians will be involved in the IT, but it's not necessarily the case that this deal that Keir Starmer has signed is going to massively change the situation. Okay. The DCCs, as we saw, don't give Infosys such a competitive advantage that it's going to like massively disrupt this structure. It's not going to mean that Infosys suddenly are going to be able to like bid so much less on these contracts that none of the other firms get a look in, as one example. Okay. So I really do think that the fears, the fear mongering from some of my buddies here and from Farage and Badenoch and so on are massively overblown. And the gains, right, that we're going to get from the opening up of the Indian export market have been undersold, in my view, which you could say is a Labour messaging issue. Okay. Or it could be one of those things where this is quite complicated. Like I had to read through the trade agreement and the contract and the, well, it wasn't a contract. It was basically like the government document that they put out. And I had to do quite a bit of research to figure out, well, what do all these things mean? Okay. And research is difficult. People can't be bothered to do it. Right. And, you know, when I say people, I mean journalists. I mean, the Daily Mail can't be bothered. Kemi Badenoch can't be bothered. Farage can't be bothered. It's just easier to simplify it and tell some story and be like, well, this deal means tons of Indians are going to come in. This deal means a two-tier system in, you know, in wages or something, right? It's easier to say that because that sells. That's outrage. It's a quick narrative win. Whereas in actuality, this was quite a complicated trade deal with quite a few moving parts, which had like big wins there for Britain and British firms. Okay, those Indian government contracts, just like we saw, the British government contracts are big, right? Having our companies bid on massive Indian contracts, that could bring in millions, billions even. For Britain. So and that, what does that mean? It means jobs, it means job security, it means all sorts of things. Okay, so I do think that we shouldn't jump the gun when it comes to these things. And okay, I'm sorry, it's boring, right? Oh, you're so boring, AA, you know, with your hate facts. But this is what I've always done. Okay, and we can't just you know, be like, well, it's Labour, so therefore it must be bad. Well, what's the point of that? It's actually a good deal. And the Tory party and Badenoch yourself worked on the deal. So it's just, you know, not everything always has to be bad news. This is actually a rare bit of good news. So anyway, I'm sure, you know, I'm going to be slated in the comments and so on and so forth. But frankly, who cares? It's a good deal. All right. See you later on for office hours, guys. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.